On August 31, 2011, I interviewed Robert Archer, President and CEO of Great Panther Silver Limited, with respect to his views on Great Panther's then-current operations and prospects. This interview is divided into four parts. It is subject to the important disclaimers and disclosures found at the end of this podcast. Headquartered in Vancouver, British Columbia, Great Panther Silver Limited, TSX symbol GPR, Amex symbol GPL, together with its subsidiaries, engages primarily in the exploration for and production of silver in Mexico. The company holds a 100% interest in two silver gold mines, one located in the Mexican state of Durango and the other in the Mexican state of Guanajuato. On July 18, Great Panther announced the acquisition of what it believes to be four prospective mining concessions totaling 1,514 hectares. Bob Archer, a geologist, co-founded Great Panther. He has been its president and CEO since 2004. Bob has over 30 years' experience working with mining companies in North America, and in that time has held and holds senior management positions with junior mining companies. Including Great Panther, he currently serves as a director of three mining companies. I am particularly pleased that Bob has agreed to be interviewed by me on behalf of StockResearchPortal.com. In part one of this interview, Bob discussed in concept the current gold price and gold mining stocks prices, the current silver price and silver mining stocks prices, his views on prospective physical silver and gold price trends at August 31, 2011, and Mexico and the Mexican states of Durango and Guanajuato, where Great Panther operates his two silver mines. Obviously, Bob's current views expressed throughout this entire interview may change as events and conditions affecting either Great Panther or the price of silver or gold change over time. Parts 2 through 4 of this interview deal with Great Panther's business model, corporate governance, business value drivers, specifics with respect to Great Panther's business, and Great Panther's prospective risks and opportunities. Bob, thanks once again for joining me today.
Thank you, Mr. Rubin.
Okay, so let's start with this question. If you could, I'd very much like you to give our listeners a view of Great Panther's current operations from 20,000 feet, and a brief history of how you and your team have taken Great Panther to where it is today.
Sure. Essentially, my business partner and I started the company as a private venture in 2003. And my partner is Francisco Ramos, is a mining engineer, a Mexican mining engineer. And we had worked together back in the late 90s in Mexico and decided that we want to start our own company. So we went forward as a public entity starting in February of 2004, using Great Panther as a vehicle to do that. And the business model right from the start was to get into production quickly, just so to focus on production and then use the cash flows from production to further grow the company rather than focus on just exploration and development where you're constantly going back to the market and diluting shareholders to, you know, continually raise money. So we had a very strong focus on production right off the bat, and in doing that we acquired the Topia mine as our first acquisition and set about to try and get that back into production. It had closed in 1999 after having operated since 1952, and it closed only due to low metal prices in the late 90s. And so we had it back up and running by January of 2006. And while we were in the process of doing that, in 2005, we had an opportunity to acquire the Guanajuato mine as our second acquisition. And so we did that and completed that acquisition and took possession by December of 2005, and shut the mine down for a period of months for rehabilitation, and then had it back up and running by June of the following year, 2006. So by that time, we had both mines in operation, and then just started gradually growing the production as we continued to rehabilitate the mining infrastructure and continue to grow production. And with every drill program, we're also growing our resources and reserves, because as two older, undercapitalized operations, neither one of our mines had any resources whatsoever when we first started. and there had really been precious little drilling done at either one. And because they were older operations, they weren't and non-public. They were not subject to 43-101 compliance or anything like that. So we had to basically start from zero with a resource base, and we've just been increasing our resources with every drill program.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much for that background. Now, what's your current number of fully diluted shares outstanding, broken down between issued option shares, outstanding warrants, and how many of those options currently are in the money, and how many of the warrants are currently in the money?
We've got, let's just pull it up here. Right now we have issued 134 million and change. And then we've got about 1.8 million options, and about I'd say 3.2 million warrants outstanding. So fully diluted, we're at 135,000. And of those warrants and options, virtually all of those are in the money. The majority at, say, 90 cents or higher. And there are some underwriter warrants from the last financing, which was just in March, April of this year. So only about 316,000 warrants there that are at $4.20, which is where the financing took place.
So you'd have a reasonable expectation of some cash coming in from the options and warrants that are in the money at some point?
At some point, yeah, that's correct. The options typically have a five-year life, so depending on when they were issued, they will either expire or they wouldn't expire. I mean, they would get exercised at different times, over the next few years.
Right. And of the current outstanding shares, what percentage of those shares, give or take, are held by your directors and management? What percentage by institutional investors, and what percentage by retail investors?
I guess management now probably owns about 4% overall. And institutionally, I'd guess somewhere around 30-35%, and the balance being retail.
Okay. And let's turn to leave the shares behind and turn to corporate governance. What's your board's option policy? And then I guess in particular, what are your own views that I'm quite interested in Great Panther providing options to consultants, or repricing outstanding options, which you don't really need to do since they're in the money, or repricing outstanding warrants if you ever got to that stage?
Three different things there. As far as our general policy on stock options, we've had a policy for several years now of granting stock options to every employee in the company. So, we do believe in incentivizing everyone that works for us. And that goes right down to the secretaries in Mexico and, the large percentage of outstanding stock options at any given time are in Mexico, and so that's been terrific for us in terms of a way of boosting morale down there. And when the share price has come up this year, it's been nice to see a lot of our employees in Mexico being able to take advantage of that and exercising options and getting a nice little reward for all their hard work. So that's something that we maintain. And the other thing too is that we try as much as possible to grant options at a price that also reflects some degree of fairness vis-a-vis the most recent financings that we've done. And you know, right now that presents a little bit of a challenge in that the last financing was done back at a level of 420, and the market's come off quite a bit from that now. So you know, we do have some options to grant to new employees, and so we, you know, we will have to do that at a realistic level that will likely be below the 420 level, but normally we would try to set it at you know, somewhere around that level of financing. With regards to repricing, as you say, it's not really an issue at the moment, but I think, you know, it's always a tricky thing. Nobody really likes to be repricing options, but at the same time, you know, you sort of have to be realistic in that options are there as an incentive. And you know, if the strike price on the options is so far away that it's really not an incentive at all, then it might as well not exist. And if they're so far out of the money, then they're just going to expire worthless. So, so you know, we always try to take those things into consideration. You know, you could argue that if a new employee comes on board and gets new options at a lower price, then he has an unfair advantage over someone who's perhaps been there for years, who's sitting with options that are well out of the money. And, you know, that hardly seems fair. And, you know, that employee might have reason to quit and go elsewhere where he can get options that are within a reasonable range. It's a complex issue, but one where we try to be as fair as possible to our employees as well as our shareholders.
Now, what about any repricing of warrants? Have you any views on that?
Repricing of warrants, we haven't done that to date, and it's not an issue that's really come up, I guess in that sense we don't really have any strong views one way or the other. There weren't any warrants issued on the last financing. The only warrants that exist are underwriters warrants that they got as part of their commission. Typically underwriters are fairly well paid for what they do. So, you know, when they take part in the financing, they, you know, these are institutional guys and brokers, and they understand the fluctuations in the market. So, I don't see it as much of an issue in that regard.
One last question on options, because your policy is interesting to include what you say are you know, down to a secretarial level, which I, you know, I think that actually has some commendable things attached to it. Do your options to employees include people who actually work in the mines, or do they stop with at the kind of salary level?
No, there's no cutoff as far as salary level, the only cutoff is whether or not they're considered employees. We don't grant options to our mining contractors, and most of our mining is done by contractors. So from that standpoint, you know, they would not be eligible for stock options. But there's no salary cutoff within our employees.
Interesting. Now, I think it's important to have an understanding if you're an investor or a prospective investor in the to understand the prior successes of a company's board members and management in building and selling mining exploration or production companies. So could you kind of go through in a you know, fairly 10,000 foot way your board and the kind of experience in that regard that it has?
I have to say, Ian, that our board is comprised largely of people who are more company builders than sellers. Having said that, there are two gentlemen, or actually one now. One was recently on the board, but has come more into executive management now. But where they were experienced in mergers and acquisitions before with other companies, but not in the mining sector. So you know, from that standpoint, we have a lot of experience in building mining companies, but in terms of selling or merging, that was, you know, that experience has been outside the mining sector. So you know, still fairly broad experience, but you know, being a junior company and one that's, you know, rapidly growing, but in a relatively small space, that being the silver business, you know, the we really do have to be opportunistic, and that goes both ways. I mean, in the sense that we're constantly looking at opportunities to perhaps acquire another company or maybe merge with another company. But you know, if someone larger than us comes along and presents us with an offer, you know, we have a responsibility to our shareholders to table that offer and either recommend taking it or not. So you know, in that regard, you know, we're not out there looking to be bought at this point in time. But we certainly are looking at potential acquisition opportunities, and you know, less so on the merger side of things. But if the right fit seemed to come along, then certainly we'd take a look at it.
Okay, now in this environment and the environment that you anticipate, do you see Great Panther as a potential takeover target? And if you don't, conceptually, why would you not?
I think that the catalyst in us being a takeover target is potentially going to be our upcoming resource for the San Ignacio project. You know, at Guanajuato, which is our flagship operation, because we started with no resources whatsoever, and we are developing the mine at depth. You know, it's not a fast process to delineate new resources 500 meters below surface. So we have been increasing our resource base, but it does take time, and we're up to the point now where we have approximately a 5-year mine life according to our resource base. You know, that will continue to increase. But our San Ignacio project is only about 5 kilometers away from the Guanajuato mine itself, and it's about 20 kilometers by road, and it's close enough that any development that we can do at San Ignacio could help feed into our Guanajuato plant, where we do have excess capacity at the moment. And so, you know, that all becomes one, so to speak, until such time as the San Ignacio project might become large enough to be a standalone operation. So from a point of view of longevity, I think anyone looking at acquiring Great Panther would like to see what those numbers are coming from San Ignacio and saying, okay, you know, here's a company that's worth acquiring, because now we can see that Guanajuato has, you know, not just the 5-year mine life that's currently showing, but, you know, has X number of years in addition to that potentially coming from San Ignacio. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest drivers in positioning ourselves as an attractive takeover target.
Okay. Now, June 30, a couple of months ago, is your latest reported quarter. And at that quarter end, you reported $37 million Canadian dollars in cash and equivalents, and you were debt-free. Now, is it reasonable to assume, given that cash position, that your shareholders can expect to not face further dilution other than from exercise of existing options and warrants, at least for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair statement. You know, even the money that we raised in the spring of this year was raised primarily for an acquisition that never actually did come to fruition. You know, it was a situation where we were bidding against several other companies. It was a fairly major acquisition, and I needed to know that in submitting a bid that we had the cash to back it up. And so it was a time-sensitive type of thing, and that was the primary reason for raising the funds. And subsequent to that, we actually withdrew our submission for that project, in large part because it was in Peru, and that all came about around about the time that there were a lot of protests, primarily in southern Peru, and they had the elections, which were looking to go to the left-leaning candidate, which ultimately did. And, you know, so from a political risk standpoint, we just felt that the amount of money that was on the table for this particular acquisition was too much for the risk at that time, and that we decided to back away and just wait and see how things played out in Peru and before making that kind of a major commitment to the country.
Okay, well, Bob, thanks again. We'll end part two of this interview now, but I look forward to continuing it and to learning more about Great Panther in parts three and four. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Important disclaimers and disclosures. StockResearchPortal.com provides this podcast interview solely for informational purposes. This interview does not constitute, nor should be construed to constitute, general or specific trading or investment advice. Neither should it be taken to endorse or recommend the business, products, services, or securities of any industry or company mentioned. This interview does not constitute a solicitation to trade in any securities mentioned and may contain forward-looking information which inherently is subject to risks, results, or events that may not be realized or occur as predicted. Prior to its release, this podcast was reviewed and approved by Robert Archer, both on his own behalf and on behalf of Great Panther. That said, the accuracy or completeness of the contents of this podcast are not guaranteed. Neither I, Ian R. Campbell, Stock Research DD Inc., the owner of StockResearchPortal.com, StockResearchPortal.com, Robert Archer, nor Great Panther will be liable for any damages relating to your use of the information provided herein. Neither I nor any investment account I control currently owns Great Panther shares, options, or warrants. That said, from time to time, I and other directors, officers, employees of Stock Research DD Inc., or members of their family, as well as persons interviewed, may have long or short positions in securities mentioned, and may make purchases and sales of those securities in the open market or otherwise. Great Panther is a paid advertiser on StockResearchPortal.com. Neither I nor Stock Research DD Inc. have received compensation in connection with this interview beyond said advertising fees. Please refer to StockResearchPortal.com's interview policy, available for review on its website. Stock Research DD Inc. owns copyright to this podcast. Stock Research DD Inc. hereby grants an unrestricted license to use or disseminate this podcast only in whole, never in part, and only if all spoken disclosures and disclaimers are included.